My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business too? Caroline Kay hosts a great podcast called Snippets of Genius. Caroline, tell us what these folks will get out of listening.
Snippets of Genius is a lighthearted business podcast with some brilliant insights into how you can attract and cultivate success. In each episode, I have an inspiring conversation with genius guests from the worlds of business development, marketing, design, and wellness. Each of them share their ballsy, daring moves to burst business opportunities wide open. Every episode is designed to give you as much value as possible so you can decide, define, and develop anything you want in your career or business.
Hard to turn that down. Where can people subscribe?
They can come on over to my website, which is www.carolinek.co/podcast, or find the show at marketingpodcast.net, or search for Snippets of Genius wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Welcome to Hanson and Hunt. This is our April 2022 episode. Hello, I'm Kevin Hunt.
And I'm Eric Hanson. Thanks for listening. We put this show together every month to help you and your work in PR, marketing, and communications. You can learn more about us at hansonandhunt.com. Coming up, how out there can a brand get on social media? And does it help or hurt their image?
Also ahead, something to keep in mind if your PR team really wants to make a journalist's job to cover your company's news a little easier, from Muckrack's State of Journalism 2022 survey.
Plus, for agencies and consultants, how do you say no to clients you don't want to work with?
All that, plus a beer maker's quick thinking tweet.
And Kevin got a new job. I'll ask him about that at the end of the show. All that and more next.
Hanson and Hunt is sponsored by BrandPoint, which has been helping agencies and brands create powerful content, drive guaranteed media placements, and deliver impactful business results for 25 years. Learn more at brandpoint.com/Hanson and Hunt.
Okay, for this month's talking point, we're discussing the dumb things brands do to get attention on social media and the consequences.
Brands do dumb things on social, Eric? Well, alert the media. We have a couple of examples from the last few months that really inspired our discussion this month.
One from Pabst Blue Ribbon that you may recall from January when they tweeted, quote, not drinking this January? Try eating ass, end quote.
Okay. I'm glad you read that one, not me. That one ended up costing the marketer who tweeted it his job. A long leash for permission for him to be a little out there apparently ran out. No need to go too far down the path on the fallout on that one at PBR. Not smart, but it probably, in the end, didn't hurt the brand. We also want to tee up a more recent example that anyone who works in social media immediately jumped on. You may have seen this. Southwest Airlines recently tweeted, hey, everyone, it's the social media intern that gave me the Twitter password. Might mess around and make a thread, IDK. Ah, yes, the social intern. Southwest followed that up with several tweets, including childlike drawings of airplanes, prompting Jack Appleby, someone who's had social roles for several brands, to tweet, quote, in one Twitter thread, you managed to perpetuate a terrible social stereotype, completely belittle interns everywhere, make your company look juvenile. We have to talk about this mess. How about that? Worth pointing out, as communicators, many people who work in marketing often criticize posts and plans like that without really knowing the intention or the audience they were after. We try to say that every time one of these things come up. But admittedly, I wasn't a fan of those Southwest tweets either. I did think it was dumb. Probably not going to get Southwest an influx of intern applicants, but what the heck do I know? Predictably, the replies to the first few tweets in that thread ignored the whole intern idea, and many just went right to typical, you know, airline customer support issues. But for the sake of this discussion this month, Eric, the heart of this whole talking point, it's one thing to be fun and wacky in social media, and we've certainly advocated for that. But are some brands trying too hard to get attention?
Yeah, that's a million-dollar question, right? With the PDR too, which is the same, but a little bit different than the Southwest Airlines one. This here's my take on the Southwest Airlines one. I think we in the bubble are getting a little too hard at brands a little bit, because if you look at the Jack Appleby tweet stream, he talks about how he got 50 marketers together and every single one of them thought it was, they agreed with you. They thought it was a terrible idea for all the reasons he outlined. And I read that and I thought, you know, I get it. Like, I agreed with some of the stuff he said, but at the same time, like, if you're Southwest Airlines and you have to promote this intern program every year, right? That's probably an ask that someone has, HR or whatever it is. Like, we got to promote the intern program. You got to come up with a creative idea to do that once in a while. And to me, it was like, was it kind of dumb? Yeah. But it was also kind of fun, and it was different and it was creative. So if we start hammering brands for taking chances like this, I feel like then we're in this rut of like brands that just go through the motions all the time. And then we hammer them for that. So which way do we want it? You know, like, I kind of tend to fall on the side of like, it might have been a little dumb and childish, and yeah, it might belittle interns, but they were taking a chance, they were having some fun, and it's the attention economy, baby. And this is the same reason the PBR one was a good talker, because like, did it get attention? Yeah, big time. Did it get the guy fired? Yeah, but it got attention. So he did his job in that way.
The question is, did you run out and buy some PBR, Eric? Did anybody really?
No, probably not. Probably not. But
hey, you know, if they're not talking about you, you know, you're not winning, right?
But, some brands will go further than others in that regard. Right. So the other thing with the Southwest too is like, for a brand like Southwest, it's in the airline industry. Like, they're getting hammered on Twitter all day long, right? All the airlines are. So like, they're looking for any excuse to infuse some positive energy into the brand, right? And like, they probably thought like, this is a chance to do that, right? We don't have to talk about the planes being late. We don't have to talk about people getting mad for wearing masks, or previously for getting wearing masks on planes or whatever. Here's a chance to be positive. Let's take it, you know?
Well, and honestly, the average potential intern for Southwest probably doesn't matter to them. You know, they want to intern at Southwest because of the airline it is and whatever perceived notion they have of the company. So if I'm a finance major and I want to intern in the finance team at Southwest or HR or whatever, you know, the childlike airplane drawings are not going to tick them off enough to not apply for that internship, you know. But I could see the point of many in the marketing world to say perpetuating that stereotype of the intern with the keys to the social channel is what got everybody up in arms.
Well, and speaking of the intern angle, so at class tonight at the University of St. Thomas, I knew we were going to talk about this in the show, and I'd seen it on Twitter. And since the kids in that class are the target audience for those tweets, I thought, well, I'm just going to bring it up and see what they think about it. Just like blindly throw it out there. It's like, what do you guys think about this? You're kind of the audience for this one. And every single one of them loved it. So you know, it's a case study of 15, but from that perspective, that audience, that small audience, it resonated with.
Very interesting. To continue the discussion, do you think most consumers just even care anymore about brands that are, you know, grabbing attention or seeking attention in their social media posts, trying to get that headline on Adweek or Ad Age or something like that? Do most consumers even care?
I don't think so. No, that is part of the PBR thing for me, is like, that's where I kind of do agree a little bit with the guy. Like, everyone's saying, what a dumb post, that, why would he swear? It's inappropriate, whatever. And to me, it's like, well, I don't know. That was pretty on brand for them. It was close to on brand. And the attention that that thing got, just that one tweet, you know, if you want to go old school and put an earned media value on it, like, can you imagine what the earned media value of that tweet was? So, and do the consumers really associate that with being dumb? No, probably not. They're like, the only people that do that are us in the marketing bubble. I don't know if the consumers do care unless it's egregious. Like PBR was borderline egregious, right? Cause like, pretty inappropriate, maybe, but it's a beer brand. So maybe they give people some rope, but like the Southwest Airlines thing, like, no, I don't think anyone's noticing that except for us.
Yeah. Well, it does make you wonder. I think another question we had as we prepped for this episode that I wanted to get your take on too, is that, you know, for years now, you know, Twitter has been around forever. Facebook, social teams have gone through various evolutions of their oversight, from, you know, who's doing it to, you know, having entire teams at some companies that, again, it used to just be one person. Do you think this, the freedom maybe that some of the folks on the front lines of social have, do you think that that's a sign that maybe they are operating more independently now, perhaps not with a lot of oversight? What comes to mind for you on that?
That's an interesting discussion, I think, because you're right. It's social. I mean, now we've been at this for a lot of us for 12, 13, 14 years. Maybe we are getting to the point where, yeah, VP person doesn't have to review everything. But then you start hearing the horror stories like the PBR, and I don't know. I still think there's a lot of oversight. I don't really hear it from my clients. There's approval loops up the wazoo. You know, it's not like anyone's getting away with just throwing things out there on Twitter. But if you're a retail brand like PBR, right, I could see it. Like some of the brands at Mills, your former employer, you know, I'm sure there's oversight at Mills, but brands like that, I could see like, hey, let's create some ground rules and then let's see what they come up with. And like, because if you remove the governance a little bit, it does free up creativity a little bit, I think. So there's something to that. It's just, you got to make sure the ground rules are intact. So PBR guy doesn't tweet, eat my ass or whatever.
This is already taking a hard turn here, isn't it? Oh man. Yeah, I think you're right. Only certain brands can get away with that. That, you know, if that's been their style overall, they already maybe have that long leash. I do think most companies and brands fall on the, everything's pre-planned, everything's pre-approved, you know, spreadsheets left and right. I definitely think that's probably the case. But, you know, what types of brands do you think can maybe approach a more independent style or have a little bit more fun and perhaps dumb when it comes to this?
Well, I think any brand could do it. It's just a matter of do they want to take that quote unquote risk? You know, like, I just think it's a fear thing. You know, like a lot of brands have these. I mean, I see some of these governance processes that some of my the clients over the years have put in place, and it's onerous to say the least. And everyone knows it, but you know, it's got, everyone's kind of nods along because that's the way it is, and that's the way we've kind of always done it. But it doesn't have to be that way. Like, you could change that, and you could give people more of a leash. As long as there's ground rules. So I don't think it's necessarily like, I know the answer there would be like, well, retail brands, CPG, like those kind of brands, but I would say B2B brands could do it too. No question. They just have to have the same processes in place to do it, but there's no reason they can't do this as well.
Well, on the bottom line, I think comes down to the reason we're talking about it as a talking point this month is that we are in a time with social media where it is hard to get attention in the first place, right? Mm-hmm. So there's going to be a number of companies and brands that can get away with living on the edge a little bit. So the reason we, you know, the Southwest stuff became a talker because, you know, people just want to try to do something different. That's part of it. But then there are those that are trying to push it a little bit and maybe, you know, get perhaps a little profane. And even our spotlight here coming up gets down that road as well. So I think, you know, we've kind of sensed that shift over the last few years, that it's obviously harder to stand out. It's harder to get that attention, don't you think?
Yeah, we're getting not desperate. Desperate's the wrong word, but like we know we have to push it, and we're willing to go to certain lengths to do that.
Yeah.
And is it crazy?
And it comes down to like how many people are really going to see this in the first place? You know, it's the Twitter audience, and yes, it might start to cross over with the average consumer, mm-hmm. but it's still none of this what we're talking about, like the average friend or neighbor of ours has no idea some of those things are taking place, right? So it's all relative on the platform too. Yeah. Well, it's probably a good place to end it there. I think just a final thought for me that I think, you know, it's a good reminder that your social team at your organization of whatever industry, whatever you do, your social team is and has been on the front line of speaking on behalf of your organization for as long as these platforms have been out there. And they hold a lot of power. And sometimes you could use that to be silly. But just when they have that type of power, it does require, you know, some oversight, some governance, as we talked about, and a lot of trust. If you're lucky enough to have people been doing it a while, you're going to have a little more trust in that situation. And I think that's important to keep in mind, too, that at the end of the day, you know, the folks that have the passwords have the power, right?
Lots of power. Lots of power. Do you have a comment about our discussion or an idea for a future talking point? Let us know. Go to hansonandhutt.com and look for our contact form, or you can record it as an audio clip. All right. Up next, a beer that newsjacked the NBA's current bad boy.
And later, the most valued social channel for journalists.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business too? Caroline Kay hosts a great podcast called Snippets of Genius. Caroline, tell us what these folks will get out of listening.
Snippets of Genius is a lighthearted business podcast with some brilliant insights into how you can attract and cultivate success. In each episode, I have an inspiring conversation with genius guests from the worlds of business development, marketing, design, and wellness. Each of them share their ballsy, daring moves to burst business opportunities wide open. Every episode is designed to give you as much value as possible so you can decide, define, and develop anything you want in your career or business.
Hard to turn that down. Where can people subscribe?
They can come on over to my website, which is www.carolinek.co/podcast, or find the show at marketingpodcast.net, or search for Snippets of Genius wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
For our spotlight, a funny moment on Twitter involving our favorite NBA team. Patrick Beverley of the Minnesota Timberwolves had a can of Bud Light at the postgame press conference after the Wolves beat the Clippers to secure the 7th seed in the NBA playoffs. When asked by a reporter what he told his former Clippers teammates as the game ended, he replied, quote, take they ass home. Long flight to LA. Take they ass home. I don't say it with enough fervor of Pat Ben. We definitely need the explicit warning on this episode. We got a lot going on. Our new favorite word, apparently. And, all right. So anyway, Bud Light tweeted at Beverly saying, quote, say the word and we'll have these waiting for you at the post-win pressers. And their tweet referred to a mock-up image of a beer can that said Bev Light with his post-game comment featured on the can. You can see a photo of it in our show notes. However, you can't see Bud Light's tweet anymore with the image because apparently they deleted it. I'm guessing the NBA didn't approve after Beverly was fined for his post-game profanity. But hey, this is our team. Thought it was a funny moment. How about you?
Interesting. I loved it. Super good work by Bud Light to do that in a timely manner. As we know, not easy to do that in a timely manner, right? capitalize on a real-time moment and make it like instantly shareable. Like I'm on Twitter most nights after the Wolves games, and everyone was sharing that the day after. So I thought that was A+ work by Bud Light.
Apparently the can will never be made because of Bud Light getting the jitters. Yes, yes.
NBA, you think the NBA is like the NFL now? Are they turning into the no fun league?
I don't know. I would love to know
what's going on, what
that conversation was.
All right, it's time for a quick news and quick take segment. We find three communications or marketing stories each month and give you our reaction.
Yeah, first up, Muckrack's State of Journalism 2022 survey. More than 2,500 journalists took part. Good data points here to check out. Similar to previous years, Twitter is the most valued social channel among journalists that were surveyed. And this year, slightly more journalists say they consult with a company's social media in their reporting, 60% this year versus 58% last year. There also is a slight uptick in journalists who track the number of times their story is shared on social, again, up a little bit to 64%. And most journalists surveyed are just as likely to respond to a pitch this year as they were a year ago. But you got to keep in mind what makes that pitch stand out. And the survey says be mindful that most journalists prefer pitches that are sent earlier in the work week, earlier in the day, and are less than 200 words, and are emails that are timely and personalized. Eric, you pulled out another stat that communicators and marketers, I think, should pay the most attention to, though. So go for it.
In the story, it said the majority of journalists surveyed create content primarily online. However, most, 74%, create content in a secondary medium monthly, with many creating content for newsletters and podcasts. So I thought that was important to pull out because that is frequently a huge opportunity for media relations folks when it comes to the stories. Like, you get the initial story online or in the hard copy sometimes. But then the secondary value is like their newsletter list is usually pretty big. And as we know from newsletter marketing stats, everyone's reading newsletters, right? So that can have almost more power than the placement in the online publication. And then the podcast too. Like, if you're pitching, if you're a B2B organization, you're pitching, a thought leader and a byline piece, like, why couldn't, and you get the hit again in the publication, why couldn't you turn around and pitch it as a guest on the media outlets podcast, which they frequently might have. So just more opportunities, I think, to look for.
Yeah. It's important to point out that, you get that media hit and the outlet, as you said, repurposes that into, their podcast. They could take a full, hour of their talk show on the radio, or they could take the clip from their TV newscast. And so there's always another way that your company can be represented in another forum. Yep, for sure. Second quick news item is from Ginny Dietrich, Spin Sucks. We love reading Ginny's stuff. And she wrote a post titled, "The 9 Things You Need to Do for Owned Media Success." And this one stood out to me as a fellow believer in owned media, of course. So I wanted to highlight a few of her key points. First, I love what she says right up front in this article. That quote, owned media takes a long time to create, takes a long time to gain traction, and it takes a long time to get results. Worth saying many, many times that there are no shortcuts in owned media. Okay, here are two of her 9 things for owned media success. Then again, you can check out the full post. Pillar content. That is, she writes, you should create something big and repurpose the heck out of it, as we were just talking about. Another one of Dietrich's 9 things, search intent is a must. She writes that, quote, I am shocked every time we start to work with a new client who has created a ton of great content but has not optimized it to be discovered or distributed. Happens all the time, which is insane, she says. She says, learn how to use priority keywords or phrases, anchor text, and link backs, and your efforts will be far more successful more quickly than most. Lots to this one. Love it. Love the patient approach to owned media. What would you add?
The search thing is interesting that she brings that up. I see that all the time too. So she's 100% right on that. Which I agree is baffling, super baffling. I loved what she listed early in the article about taking a stance. I think that's another, not mistake, but challenge for brands when it comes to owned media, specifically blogs and podcasts, is like, your thought leaders or your leaders in general, they're usually reticent to take a hard stance on a topic. And as Ginny pointed out, that's what made her blog go to the moon, was when she started having strong opinions. So that's the same for companies and brands. And then she also talked about building a community, which she is an absolute expert at, because I can tell you, like, as someone who follows Ginny on a lot of the social networks and someone that's known her for years, she responds to every comment on almost every social network she's involved with, which is insane. Speaking of insane, she's insane for doing that. But it's also been a part of her success, because as she says in the piece, that's what builds strong communities. She's done that firsthand for years.
And as we know, she's credited with the PESO model, paid, earned, shared, and owned. And in her view, owned, if she could rearrange the letters, owned would be number one. Mm-hmm. She's always felt mm-hmm. that way.
Yeah.
And so again, the importance of the owned piece of it, you can do all those other things, and you should in your integrated approach. But it starts with owned for sure. Okay, our final piece of quick news is a story from Vox. It highlighted the, quote, hottest trend on TikTok, in-depth analysis. That is the trend. And we've seen this too on TikTok. The article says all across the platform, there are people posting their commentary on news, culture, and celebrity. Why not? Of course, we live in the age of the talking head. It's everywhere, you know, for good or bad, right? Personal opinions are everywhere. Every time you turn on TV or stream anything on YouTube. The article says this style of commentary is gaining prominence among TikTok creators, influencers, trend forecasters, armchair media pundits, and celebrity mm-hmm. analysts. These analysis creators, their word, are a marked departure from the earliest days of TikTok, when content was short, simple, straightforward. Think about the dance challenges and the lip syncs, and all that's still there, of course. But it is interesting, isn't it, to see this kind of emerge, because, you know, you can upload up to 10-minute long videos, and TikTok perhaps is showcasing this in the For You feed for people to watch this stuff. So this one got me thinking, Eric, is this a way in for a company or a brand that's maybe been on the fence about joining TikTok? Yeah, think about an employee ambassador or a company leader who could offer opinions on topics in their industry, perhaps. What do you think?
Well, that's what I went to initially too when I saw this, which was news to me. I'm not a power TikTok user, as I think you know, and so this was new information, and I thought, well, you know, almost every industry is represented at TikTok. It's one of those things, like, you look up a certain hashtag, no matter what industry you're at, and there's traction on TikTok. So it is an interesting entry point for brands, because we know they've been struggling with what to do with TikTok. They're going the influencer route, some people are. But, like, this does, might provide an opening, right? Like, it's like a thought leadership play, almost. And it wouldn't need to be that sexy, because you have people that are already doing it. And so you could follow that format. So I do think there's an opportunity here. But that said, I don't think we're going to see every B2B organization with their thought leaders out on TikTok in the next 2 months. But there might be, it's about the opening that it might be giving people or brands that wasn't there, you know, a year ago.
Yeah, if people are more used to seeing this, then they might be a little more welcome to other types of it. And some of the creators, you know, will certainly have a more creative presence, you know, things you can put on the screen, you know, words and graphics and things like that. So I think it opens the door a little bit to the potential mm-hmm. for it. And, we keep talking about TikTok. It's, it is a place where a lot of people spend a lot of time, for sure.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's crazy. And it's a format. This is a format that brands are familiar with. So, like, the problem with TikTok right now is, like, brands aren't familiar with the format that works on TikTok, which is some of the things you alluded to before. But, like, this almost like headshot interview style format, brands are very familiar with that. So it might be less intimidating as well. All right, let's move on to our Q&A segment.
Yeah, it's a question for you this month, Eric. And here it is. How do you say no thanks to a client that you're not particularly excited about working with? How's that for a burning question?
Well, I don't know if you knew this about me, but in 13 years, I haven't said no ever. So I don't know why you brought up this question, but I have never said no. So this is irrelevant, really.
Really. Never said no.
I'll do a few things. Number one, I usually hear people out. So even if it's like, if a client comes to me or a potential client and, hey, I got this project I think you'd be a good fit for, I will usually take a half hour to listen to what it's about, because I kind of look at it like if I was still an employee, one of my theories then was like, I will usually hear people out if they have a job that I think they'd be a good fit for. Cause like, I don't know until I hear more about the job. So I usually start there. And then after hearing people out, if I do decide, yeah, that's not a great fit for me, it's usually like, my theory is usually no, but, cause like, I don't want to say no and just like stop it there. Especially if it's like a friend or someone I know pretty well. So it'd always be no, but, and the but is usually like, no, but you know who you should really talk to is so-and-so. And so it's usually a nice way for me to say, I'm saying no, which I don't like saying, but it also gives me a chance, like give it to someone who might be in many ways a better fit than I was in the first place. So that's the usual way I usually handle it. I will say I had to say no a couple times last week, and one was to a friend, and it hasn't gotten any easier for me over the years. I've never been good at saying no. And even with these little kind of like tricks that I've learned over the years to do it, but it's still hard for me. Like it's not getting easier with practice. But it does help me protect my time. I've learned to say no to the projects I know I really have a gut feeling that I'm not going to like or be good at. And it helps protect my time. Like right now, my time is my most valuable resource, and I'm probably more protective of it than I've ever been. And so it means I got to say no more than I want to.
Okay. Send us your question. You can do that through our website, and we may choose yours next month.
All right. We'll wrap this episode up, but we buried the lead. We need to hear about the new job.
Well, that's all the time we have, folks. Thanks for listening. What? New job? What are you talking about? Yes, it's true. It was not easy to break that news to my friends and colleagues at General Mills, but I am in a great place. I'm in week one at CHS in Inver Grove Heights, Minnesota. This is a role that allows me to oversee digital content and channels for the company. They are, just heavily entrenched in the agriculture and, of course, with energy, with Senex gas and energy. So it's a company that my father-in-law retired from. So I had a connection there. I've always kind of known about the company. It was a difficult decision to leave General Mills, and especially my team. When you're in some place for 5 years, 10 years, 11 years plus in my case, it almost feels like 30. It did kind of feel that way when it was finally time to walk out the door, that I, was fortunate to be there for as long as I was. But I am ready for the opportunity ahead of me at CHS, and I've already met great teammates there and great colleagues, and looking forward to the work. So yeah, shocker when that news got out, just absolutely humbled by the response from many of you listening who said congrats and shared some thoughts with me. I was just blown away, and it makes you feel good, but I'm also ready for this next chapter in my career.
Congratulations.
Thank you. That's great.
Thank you. And I will say one thing, like when people change jobs, which happens all the time, obviously, and people make their announcements on LinkedIn, there's always the requisite congratulations and all the outpouring of support for the person. And that happened obviously with you and then some. But what I'm really paying attention to when that happens is like, what are the people that work the most closely with the person say? And in your case, that you're talking about a handful of people. And those handful of people told you all you need to know about what it's like to work with you. So I thought that really was the, it said it all when it comes to a LinkedIn post.
Yeah, I don't know what to add to that. I mean, they're just great people, and were such friends to me over the last couple of years, especially so many times as we were all dealing with stuff, and it's beyond the day-to-day work. It's you're really in the trenches with folks in their personal life, professional life. And I'm humbled to know that I made an impact and certainly stay in touch with that team, for a long time, and excited to see how they grow and hope that they get a great leader. I mean, that job I had there, I firmly believe is one of the best jobs in the country.
It's a cool job. So it's a cool job.
Yep. Hopefully somebody good gets it, and I look forward to seeing what they do. Yeah.
I was going to say, the interesting part about you leaving that and going to CHS is that leaves a huge hole there that is going to be very interesting to see who takes that job, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm
because we know all the people in our industry, right? Like, it's right. Going to be someone we know.
Right. That's why it's so hard to walk away from that. But like I said, I really have a role now with CHS that I'm really excited about. I think there's an opportunity.
Should be fun.
To build, grow, you know, all of those things. And just, you know, find some new challenges as well. So it's worked out for me, and hopefully it works out for them. And awesome. And it's been, it's been an odd time to make a transition for sure. But, whenever is it a good time? You know, these things happen and present themselves to you, and you go where you're called to go. And I really felt that way here.
Not as odd as March 2020 would have been.
For sure. And anybody who had to start, fully remote, I couldn't imagine. Right. So thankfully I've been able to be in the office this week and meet people face to face. And I think that makes it a little bit easier to do it as well. So, we'll have some, similar flexible hybrid, approach. But I'm really prioritizing seeing people face to face and just kind of understanding the work that's ahead for me and my team.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Congrats.
We also would love to, mention a couple of basketball notes. We kind of talked about our favorite NBA team earlier, but who had a horrible showing in game two of their series with the Grizzlies. We don't need to talk about that. In fact, I've ignored every highlight or podcast about it. I'm just ready for the Thursday game three that you and I will be attending and hoping for the roaring Target Center crowd. So the Wolves are doing their thing and glad to see that. But even before that, you get to celebrate your favorite college basketball team, as you predicted here on the Hanson and Hun podcast.
I think I did predict it.
You did predict it. Kansas all the way. How about that?
I usually don't. Every year I'm very skeptical of my Jayhawks. But this year, surprisingly, as I'm sure our friend Jamie Plesser would tell you, this was not the team we expected to go all the way. So it was quite surprising, actually. But as anyone who is a huge fan of any sports team will tell you, when your team wins, it's just really, it's really fun. I mean, I just couldn't get enough Twitter for like a week, it was the parade. It was all the players saying things. It was the media. It was just, I was gobbling it, as much of it up as I could. Because you just don't know when it's going to happen again. Like Kansas is pretty good, like they're usually in the mix, but they don't, I mean, the last time they won was 2008.
Yeah.
Like they don't win all the time. Yeah. So it was a lot of fun.
Got to enjoy it. And it was probably a lot of fun for that marketing and comms team as well to be able to celebrate. I mean, that's what you hope for. You hope for the stars to align and you get to work on something like that. So very cool.
Once in a lifetime, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right. That should probably do it for us, huh?
Yeah, that's time to go, I guess. Check out our show notes for more info. Again, we thank you for spending time with us, as always.
Yeah, we hope this show is helpful to you and your work and the topics we talk about. We aim to please. So if you enjoyed the show, please tell a friend, colleague about it and offer up any suggestions that you have. We appreciate that. Join us again next month.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on NPN to help your business too? Caroline Kay hosts a great podcast called Snippets of Genius. Caroline, tell us what these folks will get out of listening.
Snippets of Genius is a lighthearted business podcast with some brilliant insights into how you can attract and cultivate success. In each episode, I have an inspiring conversation with genius guests from the worlds of business development, marketing, design, and wellness. Each of them share their ballsy, daring moves to burst business opportunities wide open. Every episode is designed to give you as much value as possible so you can decide, define, and develop anything you want in your career. career or business.
Hard to turn that down. Where can people subscribe?
They can come on over to my website, which is www.carolinek.co/podcast, or find the show at marketingpodcast.net, or search for Snippets of Genius wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.